I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast where two friends talk about cars and also beavers. I forgot to sing to you last week, and it's really peed me off that I've totally forgot. I was going to sing it, and I was going to try and find a tambourine, and I couldn't find a tambourine, and I think that's what threw me, because I thought, oh, bollocks, I ain't got
what? What you mean when we were filming?
Well, both when we were filming, driving around London in the suits and the Defender, and also then when we did the podcast afterwards, I was thinking, oh, I was going to say it then, and then I forgot again because I'm such a meat whistle. I just completely forgot. So,
but you did send me a message and say, "Have you got a tambourine?"
Yeah. Well, I just thought you might have one.
I think I ignored it because it's,
you just thought,
no.
Oh, no. I've got maracas. Do you mind if I quickly
now you've reminded
get...
me of that. What's that song? My love it in the morning, he's got a tambourine. That one.
That's
free from desire.
Free from, yeah, it's free. It's always those aisles in the supermarkets that just say free from. So she's employed to sing in those aisles these days. Free from desire. No,
who
it's all right.
That?
Gala.
Gala.
Yeah, swimming gala.
Yeah, 3 to 3 and 10.
Do you mind if I just run and get some maracas, Rich?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
What were you going to sing?
I was going to sing From Rush Hour with love I give to you.
What? Why do you need a tambourine for that?
Because it has that little From Rush Hour... with lunch.
Oh, I see.
It's important.
It's quite
element.
Subtle. Yeah.
Can I go and do it? Can I go and get
no.
it?
No. Oh. We're breaching copyright as it is. I mean...
No, we're not.
This is... Well...
No one's ever going to relate that song to the real song.
No, I mean, the YouTube algorithm that matches sound waves or whatever it does is probably not going to spot it, but, you know,
Screw you, algorithm.
Oh, bloody algorithm. The algorithm, you know, I whacked an air raid siren sound on the end of a podcast a few weeks, months ago, and it picked up on that because...
What?
It's the same generic air raid siren sound file that was used on the top of, I can't remember, Spear of Destiny song, I think it was.
Spear of Destiny?
Stop ripping off Spear of Destiny. I'm not ripping off Spear of Destiny, I mean... Let's argue that Spear of Destiny were ripping off Mr. Air Raid Siren, whoever that was.
I was going to say, well, it was called, wasn't it? There was a name of the company that made the traditional air raid siren. It's not
Claxon.
It's not called Anderson. That's the Shelter. It's somewhere else.
He made lovely
shelters. I still actually want to know what the name of the siren is at the end of the Ghost Train ride. And it's often in... pit lanes at racetracks.
Yes, it is.
And I don't know the name of that siren. It's really annoyed me because I'd like to buy one, but I don't know what it's called, so therefore I can't buy it.
That's really weird. I've just had a sort of Proustian rush of being back at Le Mans or somewhere, and that siren that goes off to warn you there's a car coming down the pit lane. Do you think it is? It must be the same one.
It's a ghost train.
But who had it first?
I don't know. That would be... What is it going to be? Is it an ongoing feud that we're going to unlock of funfair operators versus pit lane clerks of the course? So I don't know. Who just going to know?
Because I still couldn't get past that thing you pointed out the other week with the Fiat 500e that I had on test, that the little shutdown tone that the dashboard plays to you.
Oh, it's the creepy funfair music.
It's the creepy funfair, and it started to really weird me out.
Oh, I constantly look behind me to find a clown with blood all over its face chasing me with a meat cleaver.
Oh, so, hey, guys. And someone asked specifically about this, last week we recorded the show in that Hyundai Ioniq 5 that I had on test, and somebody went, oh, I wanted you to talk more about that car. And the truth was, when we were sitting in it, it had just arrived. And so...
Well, you just watched my video review of it when it first
came exactly, out. Well, exactly, yeah. Which is one of your... Is that one of your best-selling, best-viewed videos?
It's just one of my best-viewed videos, yeah. Yeah, it did really well for me.
people are interested in that car. I think I agree with you as well. I wasn't sure at first that maybe... I know you absolutely adored it, and that...
Yes.
So the one that I borrowed is silver, and it does look good, like the one that you drove, in fact. And there, that sort of seems to be the colour that they're pushing, you know, as a sort of... When they launch a car, they usually pick one colour, don't they? And that's the sort of official launch colour that they do a lot of the photos in, all that malarkey.
Yes.
But just before the one I borrowed arrived, I saw a black one, and it looked bloody awful. It doesn't work at all in black, because those arch extensions and things suddenly look incredibly cheap because they're still sort of silvery grey.
Yeah.
And all of the trimmings in the lower bumper and the arches and everything, it just looks cack on a black car. And I was thinking, God, you know, what car looks bad in black? It's usually very flattering to... almost anything.
It's a shame, because normally you can do no wrong by getting a black car, apart from the fact that obviously you have to wash it twice as often. But they are really, it's a strong colour, but it just makes the plastic look a bit cheaper, does it?
Yeah. I was quite shocked at how, like, it sort of almost looks unfinished, or it looks like someone has had a go at home going, do you know what? I think it's a bit boring, this black car. I'm going to rattle can my arches in silver. I think that'll look good.
And haven't quite got the distance of the spray from the surface.
Oh, no, it's
evenly. You know what I mean, don't you?
It's all spotty, yeah.
Ghetto door repairs.
Bullseyes on it. It's like that. So anyway, the one that I borrowed was silver, and it does look good. And I was really surprised at how much attention that car gets.
Because it's an incredible design.
Well, that's the thing. I was sceptical, and the black one had sort of knocked me back a bit, where I'd gone, is it, though, or is it just all a bit gimmicky? But I have to admit, I've warmed to it, and I think it draws a crowd, sometimes literally.
I had a car last week that drew a big crowd, also electric, actually. And I've just had it back-to-back with another of Audi's products. So I had the RS e-tron GT.
Yes.
I'd driven the non-RS, and I did a video on that when it first was launched, but the never got to have any seat time. Oh, yeah, man. Some seat time in the RS. And I thought, I wonder if it's going to be exciting and good. Mm. Mm. And it is. To the point where it has such presence, that car. It was in the tactical green. I don't know if listeners are familiar with this colour, but Audi do a good green. They do. They like their palette of greens is good.
Yeah,
they've got Sonoma green or whatever it's called for the RS cars, and this one, the tactical green. It's in a high sunlight. It looks vivid, and on a dull day, it looks very kind of military surplus, but in a cool way.
Is it honestly sort called of tactical green?
Tactical green, yes. Yeah, not like a tactical Wii or whatever you always say. No. Is it tactical Wii?
Tactical wait. Chunder is
tactical,
another one.
Yes, a tactical.
If you feel like you... Anyway, yes. That's interesting.
Is that Vorsprung lurch technique? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll tell you what, I'm feeling a bit ropey right now. Rich has just racked up the blue wickeds. Before I go back to the bar, I think I'm just going to lurch into a bin, wipe my chin, and then I'll walk back in like nothing's ever happened. Brilliant. Job
Come
done.
Come on, the taxi's going to be here in 2 minutes. Oh, shit. I'm just going to go for a Vorsprung Dirk tech piss.
Tactical piss. Followed by a Vorsprung lurch technique. Yeah, exactly. The reason why I'm telling you this is because two things. I had to go on a camping weekend with my kids for their birthday, so I was ferrying other people's kids about. The RS e-tron GT drew such a crowd, so many admiring glances, so many people wanted to talk about it. And when I parked it and walked away from it, I realised it does have killer presence. There's something about that car, and I know it's got a very shallow but deep boot, so it's a very odd-shaped boot, and I know this because I had to fill it full of camping gear. Mm. However, it's exciting, and it looks great. I get from that straight into the current RS6, the Avant, obviously, and I have been disappointed. And people say to me, oh, electric cars cost so much money. Well, you know what? They're probably not that far away from one another, these two cars, when by the time you've thrown some silly Audi-based options in the pot.
Well, yes. Now, also, Audi press cars often come quite heavily loaded, don't they?
Yeah, like they do 40
like
grand
to tick
loaded.
A box before they. Yeah. So, yeah. How much was the RS6 that you borrowed?
I've got it on an email.
Because I'm going to guess. Just take a punt that it was something a bit strident, like 130 grand or something.
If it was, then my situation is null and void. Hang on.
Oh, well, because what's the e-tron RS? Is that...
Hang on, here we go. Press fleet car, quattro, here we go. So it is... Oh, gosh, yeah. Bobbins.
Go on. What?
Yeah, it's a lot of money. It's 134,500.
Oh!
Wow, that's really... That has whipped my ass.
Mother of Jesus.
Yeah. So it's...
I mean, I know they're nice, but titting hell, you could have a lot of cars for 135 grand, couldn't you?
Yeah. That's like, gosh, yeah, really? That is a lot. Okay, that's really killed me. I'm going to go for a lie down.
Christopher Jackson, that's...
I have to say, though, I like the fact that it came... Some of the options, it came with the smoker's package, which is obviously just a plastic pot, which I put straight into the glove box, because mm-hmm. I didn't need it. It's £60. Mm-hmm. £60! And there's an air quality package for £240. I've just got
to check which is what?
The air quality... Is that the sunroof? It did have an opening sunroof.
Maybe it just comes with some really high-quality air in it when it arrives.
Is it that it forbids guffing?
I got this
guffing?
From a mountain, mate. Oh, I've opened the door and let it out. What an idiot.
Is that what it is? Or, you know, there's been that shortage of carbon dioxide recently. It's the total opposite of that. Do they just pump high-end oxygen through the vents?
Yeah.
A bit like when Citroën started putting air fresheners, diffusers into the cabin.
Yes.
Does Audi just throw oxygen in there? Then you get a real bit, you get high on life, and you think that it's way better than it really is.
You go to those health spas where they have oxygen bars, don't you? So it could be...
I've never done one.
No, nor have I.
I'd really like to. I'd like to have a proper belly full of... I'd like to fill my bags with oxygen and then do a podcast.
That's
just
not
see if it makes a difference.
Lungs, not belly.
Bags. All right, bags. Fill my bags.
Bags, ooh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, this is just a moot point because my daughter, who's 4, is currently disputing how the human body works.
Who's 4?
She told me yesterday she ate some sausages and then she turned them into wee. And I had to say, no, the sausages will be turned into poo. And she said, no, wee. I was like, no, that's not how it works. The water that you drank, that would turn into wee. No, sausages. Also. And so it went on. I was like, I remembered I had this brilliant book as a kid that was sort of how the human body works. And I obviously it was long gone because I wished I could just go, look here in cartoon form, how poo's made. So I might have to buy one of those. But
gosh.
So how much was the... Now, is
well,
it
listen, I, see,
e-tron RS? RS e-tron? That car feels like it's got a sort of a soup of words and letters, and I'm not
it
sure
is,
which order...
It, well, I used to get it wrong. It is RS at the front. So it's RS e-tron GT Quattro.
Right.
But they're all Quattro, so you sort of ignore that. So it's the RS e-tron GT, whereas the other one's the e-tron GT. I like the fact that it says on the road costs include half a tank of fuel, and you go, what, so they're only going to half charge it? Well, I'm not sure it's relevant in this instance. Let me get the... sorry, listeners, I wasn't expecting
still
to...
Still reeling about that RS6 being 135 grand. Does it say on your cheat
sheet?
No, that's the RS.
That's the RS, the what? GT.
Wait, hang on, which was 135 grand?
The RS e-tron GT.
Oh.
The electric one. I'm about
is
to
it 135 grand?
It's 135 with the options that particular car has got. Okay.
What's the base
How
price?
Much is the... It doesn't say. I think it's 100 and... It's not quite, a lot less than that.
It's quite spicy, isn't it? It's 120 or something.
I think it's a massive jump on from the normal e-tron GT, and I'm not sure it's worth it, but...
Okay, so...
That's only because it's a lot of money, like a lot of lot.
I thought you meant the RS6 was 135 grand, so that's not. How much is the RS6?
Okay, before I give you the price of the RS6, bearing in mind it is grey, because of course it's Nardo grey, how much is the panoramic glass sunroof on that car?
It's on an RS6.
Yeah, it's a good sunroof, and you can open the blinds at the back separately to the front, which I do like.
That's always good. Yeah,
it's always good. Yeah, and I got driven to have a CPR test in it this morning by my wife, who seems incapable of modulating the throttle and the brakes. So I felt really quite travel sick in the back of it, and I don't get travel sick. So, how much is the glass?
Just the sunroof. Because it sounds like it's a swishy one, so I'm going to say it's $4,000.
Oh, come on, Richard. It's $2,000.
Oh.
It's $2,000. Oh, it's still a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, for a sunroof. I mean,
okay, how much is the RS Sport exhaust system? Bearing in mind that's an option, and it is an RS6, so it should just have a sport exhaust system, I think.
Yeah. Is it an Akrapovich or something like that?
No, I don't think it's
titanium.
It's not acrobatic, and it's
acrobatic. No,
it's not an acrobatic
an
exhaust
acrobilk
system.
Exhaust system. I'm going to say that is like $8,000.
No, you're just ruining this game. You're just overpricing it. It's £1,450. It's
£1,500.
Well,
how am I ruining the game? You're asking me to guess, and I'm guessing, and I'm guessing badly, as it turns out. This is all quite £1,400 for the exhaust system seems quite cheap, because I'm sure when you have that.
Okay, on the road price for the RS6 Avant TFSI Quattro Carbon Black Edition Tiptronic in Nardo Grey, how much?
With the options that car's got on it?
With the options of this car, which it doesn't actually have that many, to be honest.
All right, I'm going to say $115,000.
Oh, you're so close. Well done. $112,000.
Oh, $3,000 out.
Yeah,
but that's a lot of money all the same for a nice estate car. But, you know, sort of they feel like, what should they be? I don't know.
But
not,
you know,
not
the
six figures.
I think the reason why I started this conversation was because people always go, oh, electric cars cost so much more. But hang on a minute. Look at the technology in that RS e-tron GT. And look at the technology in the RS6. Now, the RS6 has a lot. I know as an engine, it's quite an advanced engine, but it's all stuff that's been kicking around for quite some time. And if you shave off some of those lunatic options, they're almost the same price, really. And hang on a minute. One of them's been around for ages, tech-wise, and the other one is like, honestly, when you drive them back-to-back, the RS6 feels so clunky and so, I don't know, mechanical, but not in an exciting way, just in a sort of inconvenient way.
Yeah.
Like, the start-stop pisses me off so much, and I haven't been pissed off by start-stop for ages. It's just that particular one just annoys me.
Yeah.
On full lock, you feel all the diffs kind of clicking and not quite understanding you. It doesn't.
Really?
I put it in dynamic mode and did a few launch controls, and it's like, this feels half the speed of the RS e-tron GT. Honestly, I was just left going, hang on a minute, I wanted to have my ass torn out by this car, and the RS e-tron did that. That is rapid, and it's good. But despite the fact they both look incredible, they don't fit on UK roads.
Oh.
They just don't.
Too wide.
Okay, about 6 metres wide. It's ludicrous. And I think, you know, that you've got to go back to this whole fit for purpose thing. If I want to drive like a CU next Tuesday, now and again, on a quiet road, it's simply too wide. It's just too wide. So on that side of things, not massively useful.
On the left-hand side of things.
Yeah, on the left-hand side of things.
Fit for purpose, I always, is one of those expressions where I hear it in my brain as fit for porpoise, and always imagine a sort of aquatic mammal at the wheel of a car or using some scissors or whatever the context might be. I've just looked this up on the Audi website. So the e-tron GT non-RS starts at £81,200.
Yes.
The RS is £12,250. So it is about the price of that RS6 with some options. They're not that far off.
That's what
which
I mean.
Which means that that RS e-tron GT that you had 20 to over 20 grand's worth of options on it.
That's lunacy.
Shit.
I mean, it looked amazing. It did look amazing. The wheels were right. The carbon roof looked good. It just looked fantastic. And the boys that my son and his mates, who I had to take to the skate park and the campsite, I mean, they were all over it. They just thought it was insane. And it did feel exciting and new.
Has it got room in this inside? Is it spacious?
It's like someone that's got very wide shoulders but has quite a small head on those shoulders, and you're sitting in the head, and you're aware of the fact.
Rick Waller.
Yes, a bit like that. Yes. So what I would say is, when you climb down into it, and it is a bloody low car, obviously it's a sports car, really. So you are aware of the fact that the cabin is compromised. Legroom's fine. Sort of headroom, it just feels a little bit cramped and dark. But I like the seating position, and I think it's really exciting. I just think it's a far superior car to the RS6, and I never thought I would say that. But having driven them straight away, got out of one, got into the other, you really notice the fact that the RS6 doesn't feel as much of a weapon as I thought it would. I just think it's, if they don't make an Avant version of the e-tron GT, then they are missing a massive Audi unique selling point, USP. Because everyone loves a fast, long roof Audi, do they not?
And
going at both ends.
Yes, but do they actually buy them? Or is this sort of car journalist, I like this, therefore they should make it, which I think we're all guilty of sometimes. And you just go,
stop it.
Do this. And, stop, you know, like American car journalists were sort of obsessed for years with why VW wouldn't sell them diesel estate cars. And I always wanted to go, guys, we have diesel estate cars here. Trust me, you're not missing anything.
Well, you miss what you can't have, don't you?
Well, it's true. Yes, exactly. I think we've mentioned this before. It's like, yeah, we always sort of go, oh, I'd love more things with V8s. And you go, yeah, but there's a lot of American V8s are a little bit dog shit, aren't they? So let's not be too sad.
I'd like to have a V8 with less power than a really highly strung four-cylinder.
How is it? 4.6. And how much power? 124 horsepower. Wow. Great.
You talk about porpoises. I keep talking about narwhals just because I sometimes have a dream where I'm convinced they're not real, that they're a unicorn-like creature. And then I have to wake up and look it up and go, no, they're real. They exist, don't they? Narwhals exist. They're not like an extinct animal, like a woolly mammoth, and they're not like a unicorn, which never existed. They're real. Can we clarify this?
This is all in the same spectrum of things where, I mean, we're very lucky we live in an age where very quickly you can look things up.
It's
a luxury that our parents didn't have back in the day. Because I have that with all sorts of stuff. I'm pretty solid on narwhals. I think they do exist.
You're quite solid.
I will double check. But
you're solid on narwhals.
I'm pretty solid on narwhals, the crazy pointy-headed twats that they are. But it's like the other day, someone said, when Gary Rhodes died, and I was like, Gary Rhodes? When did Gary...
He did die.
Totally forgot about that. And here's one, actually, which is, since we're sort of talking about cars for once, I had to write something about a Renault, and I was thinking, now, what's the Renault range in Britain? Clio, yes. Megane, yes. Espace, they got rid of in Britain years ago. Went onto the Renault France website to double check it's still there. It is. You can still buy an Espace in Britain. It's that one that we never got here. That's quite a handsome thing.
Oh, nice.
Laguna, not available in Britain, but not available in France. But they do have the Talisman, which is a sort of medium-sized saloon thing that we've never had here.
I've driven a Talisman.
Have you?
Yeah, I have.
How have you driven a Talisman?
In France.
Oh.
Yeah, what? It's in France.
On official business or like a hire car?
No, it was official business. Yes,
business.
It was. It was. But it was actually really, really cool. I liked it.
Try this one on for size. The Scenic. The Renault Scenic.
Yeah. Okay.
Do they still sell that in this country?
Oh, do they still sell the Scenic? Remind me, it's smaller than the Espace. And was it used to be badged the Megane Scenic, or was that different?
It did, yeah. And then I think they spun it off to a separate
to
model.
A Scenic.
But they
used to be
everywhere, didn't they? Lots of people had Scenics.
They did, and actually, a really good second-hand car. It's just that they're not cool, so therefore everyone runs away from them.
But are they, though? Because I think they're a bit flaky, weren't they?
I don't know. I'm quite happy to be flaky these days. I don't know if it allows me to daydream about narwhals not necessarily existing.
Good
in the
excuse
real world.
For not doing things. Sorry, I couldn't make it to your birthday party, but I've got a Megane Scenic and it's not working.
Oh yeah, perfect, perfect for that. I'd love that.
Anyway, I will tell you that they don't sell the Renault Scenic in Britain anymore.
Oh bollocks! I thought I was going to be a curveball.
But they do still sell it in France. But in this country,
absolutely.
I was quite shocked at this, because I was like, that scenic used to sell quite well. I feel like there were scenics everywhere, and no, they've just deleted it.
I think that the tide turning from people carriers to SUVs was a quick tide. Suddenly, yes, because what's the term for people carriers?
MPVs.
MPVs. I kind of regret being harsh on some of them at the time. And I think I put that down to the age I was when I was reviewing or sort of digesting some of those cars. I didn't have a family. And I think this is why sometimes you shouldn't listen to experts in inverted commas, because I didn't have a family, so I didn't know all of the unsung practicalities of those kinds of cars. And now that they're gone, I bloody miss them. It's a bit like going out and killing all the beavers and then realising suddenly that if you were to lick a beaver's face, it would stop you from ever having cancer.
What?
And then going, well, it's the same. It's so similar. And you go, I wish I hadn't killed them all, because it's really useful.
Who's killing them all?
What, beavers?
Yeah.
Well, I just say if I had. Well, we killed all the beavers in this country, didn't we?
Did we?
Yeah, that's why they were extinct. And then we had to reintroduce them. That's why there's a bit of a fight at the moment. We have started to very carefully reintroduce beavers.
Have we?
Yeah, we have. I'm pretty sure. You're making me...
Beavers. You're the man who's not sure if narwhals exist, so forgive me for being slightly sceptical about your natural history knowledge.
Listen, you blimmin' scrotal lesion. Hang on, I'm just going to look it up.
You do beavers. That. What I was going to say,
I'm going to look up beavers in Britain on my desktop. Beavers.
Yeah, I'd make sure your safe search settings
beavers
are sort of middle.
Beavers in Britain. Here we go. Guide to Britain's beavers. This is great. Guide
Where
to Britain's beavers. Oh, here we go. This here we go. I'm not talking bobbins. After becoming extinct 400 years ago, beavers have returned to Britain's rivers. Mm-hmm. While some have been introduced, other origins are less clear and not all welcomed by local people or landowners. This is the Countryfile guide to the history of British beavers, their reintroduction and best places to see them. Okay, here we go.
Where are the best places to see them?
Best places, there's beavers.
Canada.
No, Western Scotland is probably one of the main parts of beaver spotting. Mm-hmm. How big are Eurasian beavers? The size of a Labrador, says Peter Burgess, conservation manager for Devon Wildlife Trust. Oh, this
size
is great.
Of a dinosaur.
This is great.
Shit, run.
It says in speech marks, the size of a Labrador, well, at least a Cocker Spaniel, says Peter Burgess, conservation manager for Devon Wildlife Trust. They can be up to 1 metre long with a 50 centimetre tail, and they can weigh up to 30 kilos.
That's just, how big are they? Oh, at least the size of an elephant. No, wait, sorry, not an elephant. I meant a guinea pig.
Oh, when did beavers become extinct? Beavers were once native to the UK, but they were hunted to extinction as recently as 300 years ago. They were hunted as vermin for their fur for their meat, which was apparently highly prized.
The beaver meat?
Beaver meat? I'd love a beaver burger. Wouldn't you?
Hang on, don't they eat fish?
Yes, that's why they dam and then they catch them, because they're clever like that. But the damming annoys landowners because it can flood.
Yeah, it does. But meat would taste revolting, because it's the same reason we don't eat seagulls, isn't it? Because they're just, their fish-based diet makes their meat rather sort of fishy.
Yeah.
Is that right? I don't know.
I don't know, but then maybe we weren't so fussy back then. We didn't have Pret a Manger and all that shit.
Yeah. I've got some beaver sashimi for lunch today.
That's a beaver sashimi.
Hi, I'm Beaver Sashimi. Coming up on NBC News.
I'm getting into this now. The beaver was last seen in the wild in Britain in the 16th century after being heavily hunted for its pelt. They had all but died out across Europe by the 18th century. Do beavers eat fish? No, they don't. They eat vegetation, including leaves, roots, shoots, and stems of waterside vegetation.
The silly pricks damming the rivers for, then? I mean, that's just stupid.
Oh, I know. They fell the trees to get to the tender foliage at the top of the tree. Oh, my gosh, that's so much work for some little shoots.
Learn to climb, for fuck's sake. Wow. I mean, the squirrels can manage it.
So apparently... apparently beavers, best place to see beavers, Scotland and Devon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
yeah, if you'd asked, I would have guessed West Country, but for no real reason except there's quite a lot of rivers down there, maybe. I don't know.
There's a small population on the River Otter in East Devon. That's confusing, calling a river an otter and looking for beavers. But anyway, I didn't think we'd be talking about beavers today. Why do beavers build dams? They build dams over 1 meter high using the tree trunks that they fell to create deep pools as refuges, as well as to make it easier to get around.
What?
They also use deep water as a refrigerator to store the food over winter. They tend to build the dams in the smaller upper tributaries of a river. Uh-huh. I'm learning so much about beaver.
Wow. And all this from the Renault Scenic.
Who would have thought it, you see?
Exactly.
So we go back to what I'm saying is, I didn't miss the MPV and I didn't fully understand it until it was extinct. And it's sort of on the brink of extinction in Britain, although there is still some brilliant cars, like, is it the Rifter, the Peugeot Rifter?
But that,
which is great. Why are you laughing? That's not funny. That's the because name of it.
When they announced that car, they said we're calling it the Rifter, and I was convinced that Rifter was like a Glaswegian word for twat, and I asked a Scottish mate of mine, he went, no, but I see what you mean.
And it's close.
Yeah, fucking Rifter, what are you doing? And I just can't get past that.
It sounds like
it should be a rude word in Scotland. Also, that's a van, though, isn't it? That's just a converted van.
But that's what all the best MPVs are.
Mm.
Because now, don't forget, vans are so good now. Vans 15 years ago are nothing like vans now.
No. I mean, look, I'm not dissing the car based, the van based car, because the Citroën Berlingo, the original one, was ace, and the Ford Tourniquet Connect.
The Ford, yes. Please, I've just struck my jugular vein with a chainsaw. Can you just pass me a tin towel?
Can you bring me your Ford Tourniquet, please? That was quite good as well. But then, I don't know, it's a case-by-case basis. But your bespoke MPV, I just checked, and the Ford Galaxy and S-Max, they're still on sale.
Yeah, they are.
How long, I wonder?
Well, can we start buying them again? Just on the basis of how useless so many SUVs are, I just think people should have a go. Also, Peugeot sells something called the Traveller, which is probably a controversial name, with some interesting connotations.
Mm.
And they do an electric one called the e-Traveller, which again might be a little bit weird to say. What car do you drive? Oh, I drive an e-Traveller. It just makes it sound like somebody that's off their face with no fixed abode.
just rides the public transport networks of Britain.
Yeah, what are you doing, mate? Well,
dancing to the little beep that happens when the doors close on a train.
Yeah, well, mate, I've got an old builder's van that I put a wood burner in the back of, and to be honest, the next couple of days I'm just going to be licking trees, really, and dancing at the moon. What are you doing?
Well, anyway, I'm trying to think of other bespoke MPVs that still exist, because that's it. Renault does still make the Scenic and sell it in France, but they don't they've deleted it here, because clearly people just want SUVs, and they've got that they've got the Todger and the Radger and the all of those ones that they make.
The Todger,
the Kadjar.
Oh, Kadjar, yeah. I remember reviewing it for Fifth Gear, and I had to do about 30 retakes because I just couldn't say the name. You know when you know how to say it in your head, but your mouth can't do it. And I kept wanting to say the wrong thing. And in the end, I just put my head in my hands. Like, I just can't say the name of this car I'm reviewing. This is bullshit. I'm a complete...
I just... More car reviews should end like that.
Yeah, well, probably wasn't my finest television hour on OTSOT. But, so I think bring back the MPV, really. Otherwise it's almost a beaver.
Yes.
And we should reintroduce it to Britain like the beaver.
Holy shit.
What?
I've just remembered something.
What?
The thing that I forgot to bring up on the podcast last week, which was arguably the most significant thing I discovered at that James Bond premiere.
Yeah.
In terms of its relevance to this podcast and things that we discuss. And it's this. One of the second unit directors for No Time to Die. Yeah. Also directed some extra filming that they did with those stunt defenders. So if you see the Land Rover advert for the defender that's got all of the Bond footage in it, which is
the 007, is it the 007 edition?
It does mention that at the end, yeah. But the cars that are in it are all the stunty ones from the movie, which someone pointed out to me on socials, and I should have said when we filmed with that car, and I said, "Oh, it's like this is identical to the ones in the film." Not entirely true, because we filmed with a diesel, and the stunt cars in the movie were all the P400 petrols.
Okay.
Just a tiny detail, but this is not what I'm bringing up. What I was going to say, first of all, at the end of that Land Rover advert, a defender sort of does a kind of like jump that turns into a roll.
Roll through a hedge.
The way the A-team always used to crash cars. Lands on its wheels and then drives off. And that's not from the movie, and it wasn't even a deleted bit from the movie. They specially shot that later at Land Rover's test track at Fen End because they really wanted a roll where it landed on its wheels and drove off, knowing that they were confident it could do it.
Yeah.
And the movie people said, oh, well, we never got it to land on its wheels. When they rolled, they tended to stay turned turtle. And so they took one of the stunt cars to Fen End with the second unit director from the movie and got him to film this. And apparently they did it over and over again, and it wouldn't land on its wheels. It would land on its roof and on its side. And then the last shot of the day, they gave it one last go.
How many cars did they use?
One car, apparently. They just kept rolling it over. If you look at it, it is quite dinged up.
Oh, is it? I didn't notice, because you thought, not when you roll something, you pretty much gouge all the roof in.
But yeah, well, I think they've got roll cages, but even so, I don't know how much there was sort of people lying on the seats with their feet stamping the roof back into shape. But
and they just got a load of filler and just spatula. Yeah.
Well, it happened to a guy I was at school with. He turned his Mini onto its roof, old school Mini, and they, with the help of a farmer, they got it back on its wheels. And the domed roof on the Mini was all popped in, so they just got inside and kicked it.
They just
back kicked
it. Oh, yeah. Man.
And they sort of polished all the scuffs out, and his dad never found out.
His dad never found out? His
apparently
dad never,
not, no.
His dad must have never looked at the car.
Well, just only ever parted outside when it's dark. Anyway, they did that. They did that bit of the end of the Land Rover with one of the second unit directors from the actual film. And
because you can hear them on the walkie-talkie, can't you?
Yeah.
It says, okay, let's do that again, or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So they sort of spoofed it up so that it all seems like it's from the film to match in with the other footage. But the reason I bring this up is that director, who did stuff for the movie and did the extra shots for the Land Rover adverts, is the man about whom Sade wrote Smooth Operator.
Piss off.
That's what I was told by a very senior person from Land Rover. And he mentioned it so casually and then I think was surprised at my reaction, which was one of shouting what in quite a busy bar.
Hang on. So Sade sung the song Smooth Operator because of this guy who happens to be a stunt coordinator for
he's
cars.
A director. He's a second unit director, and he's South American. I can't remember which country I was told he's from. But in the 80s, he dated Sade.
Oh, my gosh.
She wrote that song about him. That's the claim.
I cannot
verify it. I did try and Google it to see if I could find out any more. There's nothing online, but Sade, if you're listening in your RX-8 and you'd like to confirm it, drop us a note, hello@smithandsniff.com.
We've got it. We're going to have to make a video where we go... We pop to Sade's to deliver us some rotary.
Sade hunting, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing... I don't know if I can top that for bloody trivia,
Richard. I can't believe I forgot it last week. And because obviously we had a bit of a late night before we recorded the podcast. And
it did.
It sort of slipped my mind. And then I realised I'd...
You had voiceover throat, didn't you, the next morning?
Jesus, yes.
You really did. You keep making me laugh with that blimmin' photoshopped Daniel Craig skiffle poster, which does make me laugh.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's just very good.
Do you know what? That was after we recorded the podcast on Wednesday morning, after the premiere.
You did some work avoidance, didn't you?
Yeah, a massive work avoidance, brain not functioning in any meaningful way. And the only creative thing I managed to do all afternoon was Photoshop a washboard under Daniel Craig's arm on a poster and then change the word Skyfall to the word Skiffle.
Skiffle.
You which I put on Twitter last week, didn't I? So people should have seen that. But I have spent... Ever since we started talking about that, I have spent just walking around the house going with the skiffle.
I'd quite like it if I can't stop singing that song, as we established last week. But I think if in my head, Adele, I'd like Adele to go da da skiffle and a tumble and a da 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 all together off of Skyfall. I wanted to just say off of Skyfall, just sort of as a throwaway, you know, at the end of the big emotional. You know, because she said everything about Skyfall. Oh, yeah, there's this about Skyfall. Oh, yeah, there's that about Skyfall. Just go, oh, yeah, off of Skyfall.
What, just a quick recap at the end?
Just go, yeah, off of Skyfall. Yeah. Because when people say, oh, I know off of has become one of those sort of tics that people have. Yeah. Even my brother's saying it all the time. Like my brother would say things like, "Oh yeah, Gary Rhodes off of death," and I go, "What does that mean?" He just go, "Oh yeah, Gary Rhodes died." I go, "Yeah, that's just a weird way of putting it. He's just trying to be down with the kids." My brother doesn't listen to this podcast anyway, so he won't know. I've ever said that.
Well.
He mocks me for listening to the radio stations that I frequently listen to, and he listens to Radio 4. So I'm,
does he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
no, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that
it's just deeply boring. Apart from that, it's fine.
But isn't he also? He's spending all his days like underneath cars or head deep in an engine bay and things. And
yeah, he is.
His vintage
car stuff.
Isn't it? Is it how loud does he have Radio 4 to be able to pick up the spoken word?
It's louder than I would like, especially when it's a sort of quiet, because it's the monotonous drone of it. It's not exactly flamboyant chat, and I find that personally a little bit irritating. I'm saying this as someone who's making a podcast, and probably people go, yeah, actually, mate, you've got a rubbish voice, and you're not very interesting either. Well, no, maybe I'm not, but anyway... Nobody's paying me to say
this.
Kettle
of twat, isn't it?
Exactly. Pot kettle twat.
Yeah.
That's my new favourite term. Yeah, come on, pot kettle twat. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, so...
And now on ITV1, Pot Kettle Twat.
It's the new game show by Stephen Ahern or whatever his name
is. Yes, I was going to say Ben, what's his name?
Fogel?
Who is that guy? Is it? No, he's...
DIY SOS.
No. Nick Knowles?
Nick Knowles.
No, you see, I'm not giving that project to Nick Knowles because I'm keeping him for the other idea I've had, which is Knowles House Party.
Oh, stop it. You're bringing it back, and then Noel Edmonds will Skype in and just troll him.
From New Zealand.
He'll be patched in on a Skype call and go, you can't do it. You can't do it. You're definitely not having Blobby, so piss off.
You'll be hearing from my lawyers, and Noel's just slams the laptop shut.
Yeah. And if you turn up in a Ford GT40 replica that's been crafted out of an MX-5, I'll kill you. I'll come over and I'll cut you.
That's an uncanny impression of how I imagine Noel Edmonds conducts himself when faced with GT40 replicas.
And Noel's just goes to him and goes, well, look, you're in New Zealand now and it's really complicated to fly home. So here we are with another terrible selection of replica GT40s. This one's made out of a Hyundai Sonata. This one over here is made out of
this one's just a pile of boxes. And Edmonds is driven puce with rage down the Zoom line.
He's like, oh, yeah, we've painted this one pink with just silly yellow circles on it. I wonder what that's all about, eh? Raise the eyebrow to camera.
Go on, come over here and get me then. But you live in New Zealand. Good luck getting back into the country.
Exactly. P.S. I'm throwing loads of negative energy out there. All about Ford GT40s. Love you, Noel. Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Noel! He shouts, beard a quiver.
Knowles versus Noel. It'd just be brilliant, wouldn't it? One of you helps you with your extension, the other one just dry slaps you if you talk about negative energy. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Where were we? Oh, I know. You've apologised for not mentioning the thing that you were supposed to mention last week. I was supposed to mention a letter from a listener involving exploding drinks in cars. Do you remember we talked about fermenting drinks?
We disasters? Sort of teased this 2 weeks ago, didn't we?
I like this story. I think it's quite funny. So this is from a listener called Henry Peacock. And Henry, in his email to the old Smith & Stiff address, is titled Exploding Smoothie Disaster. Dear Otsot, episode 75. Really enjoyed the piece about the explode. I'm reading this. This is what he said. I love that, dear Otsot, like some sort of agony uncle.
Yeah, well, this is our name now.
Uncle Otsot.
Uncle Otsot.
Yeah. Dear Uncle Otsot, episode 75, enjoyed the piece about the exploding orange carton. I, too, have had a fruit drink-related disaster which nearly killed me. Back when I was at university, I used to spend my summers working on a farm in Lincolnshire and had a 40-minute drive to and from my parents' house for work. My 2003 Fiesta ZTEC 1.43 door, good detail, thanks for that, was always at maximum attack on the smallest of country roads. And I used to pride myself at not ever using the brakes until I pulled into the driveway to come to a standstill. My gosh, he's gone to the Tiff Nadell School of Brake Avoidance. there's a reason why Tiff Nadell was never sponsored by a brake company. Cos never used. I would take my packed lunch each day, and I decided to take an entire, in brackets large, carton of innocent smoothie from the fridge and set off on my merry way, representative image below. Okay, so he's attached to the email just a picture of a smoothie carton and a picture of his Fiesta ZTEC. Okay, right, so I decided to take the entire carton of innocent smoothie, set off on my merry way. This carton then proceeded to be left in the car for several days in the passenger footwell in what was a very warm summer of 2009, with the black car being in direct sunlight day after day. So there I am, heading home along my normal country roads in maximum attack mode, hitting every apex, playing New York City Cops by the Strokes at full volume, rolling a cigarette with one hand. Life was fantastic. I don't want to recommend anyone does that, although the song is good, not sure about the rolling with one hand. And then it happened. What I can only describe as a bomb going off. The explosion was so severe, with pressurised liquid had exited the vertically positioned carton out through the top and fired across the entirety of the inside of the windscreen, all over the headlining of the vehicle, covering me and everything, and I mean absolutely everything, with liquid. I had no forward visibility of any kind. Travelling at speeds Ari Vatanen would be envious of created a little problem. Quick thinking and electric windows, standard on the ZTEC, meant I could get one down and stick my head out and guide the vehicle away from oncoming grain lorries and to a safe stop by the side of the road. Gathering myself, I realised I had nothing to wipe the inside of the window down apart from my own T-shirt. So I arrived home, topless, covered in fermented banana and strawberry smoothie. He sounded like a B-side Chippendale. Every surface, switch and piece of fabric inside the Fiesta had been covered. I spent 3 hours cleaning the car, but the sweet, sickly smell never quite left the vehicle. I ended up handing the car off to my mum, and in 2014, after several years of loyal service / abuse and 150,000 miles, it finally decided enough was enough, and the car committed suicide. I love this pod, and I love the Late Break Show live in Leicestershire. Please keep up the good work. Best, Henry, in brackets, not the actual carton of smoothie, just a representative image of the actual one that went off in my car. There we go. So, listen,
the stickiness.
Can you imagine that smell? Jesus. And just the fact that he ended up coming home topless, covered in banana and strawberry, icky, sticky solution.
Oh, man. I hate
it's like
when
massage
things are
oil
sticky.
Gone wrong.
That just makes me feel a bit queasy thinking about it. You'd be finding that for ages afterwards, wouldn't you? You'd think you'd got it all, and then you'd touch something in the car and it would be gummy.
Especially if it's one of those switches where it's one press to go in and then one press to go back out again. You know, like a heated rear window button, I'm going to say.
Yes.
One of those. If you get a little bit of smoothie or some other sticky liquid in there, I mean, you're doomed. You're doomed, aren't you? That's 1,000 cotton buds to just sort the dash out.
Oh, it's... Yeah, I mean...
I mean, I don't buy cotton buds for my ears. I buy them for doing things like that anyway, but... Yeah.
I'm so amazed that that's sort of perilously close to writing off the car from just stickiness, but...
Yeah, it probably is, actually. Probably is.
Since we're sort of going to run out of time, but since reading out a message from a listener that stitches back to something we previously mentioned, I had flagged this one from a listener called Jonathan Golby about... another message we had from a different listener about teenagers driving cars into car auction halls.
Auctions, oh, really?
Say. Yeah, so Jonathan says, "Hello, gentlemen. I was listening to this week's offering while driving to work when you read out an email from another listener talking about Leinster car auctions. This brought back all sorts of fond and ridiculous memories from the early 2000s. Me and my three mates..." Leinster. Leominster.
Leominster.
Jonathan says, "Me and my three mates, Nick, Jason and Richard, were lucky enough to be four of the teenagers employed on a Thursday night to drive the cars through the ring. At 17 years old and car fanatics, this was a dream. Our evening would start meeting in Hereford City before driving ourselves individually to the auction. Really, it was an excuse to have a race across a terrific back road." Nick in his Mini, Jason in his SR Nova, Richard in his Diesel Cavalier, me and my 1 litre Citroen AX, which had been upgraded to a 5-speed. Nice.
Oh,
anyway,
I remember doing that.
After this warm-up race, we would happily spend 3 hours driving cars around the ring. The drivers were organised by a legend of a man named Dino, who at the end of the night would supply us all with chips and let us twat around in the compound with any cars we liked the look of after the auction had closed.
What?
Yeah, I know. The reason for writing... Dino was not running a tight ship there, but the reason for writing was to tell you about one of the auction regulars, Colin, or Leg, as we would call him. Colin was a typical used car dealer who would attend the auction week in, week out. A good-looking blonde man with a stereotypical sheepskin coat.
No,
as
really?
As you would approach the auction hall and join the queue, you would be surrounded by interested buyers asking you to pop the bonnet or rev her up. Unless it was Colin. Colin would take things a weird step further, leaning into the car and squeezing your leg while shouting, "Leg, leg, leg," with the hope that your foot would slip off the clutch and you would do some damage.
What?
Reflecting now as a 37-year-old, you would question the motives of Colin. However, it became a great source of entertainment for the four of us as we would race back to the Nag's Head for last orders to compare scores of who had been legged the most. Cheers, Jonathan.
My gosh, wow.
Really nice. So someone mentions teenagers at Leinster car auctions and we have one of the actual teenagers gets in touch and turns out there was some sort of slightly weird behaviour going on with car traders there. But yeah,
don't you just love human behaviour? Don't you? It's endlessly fascinating. I feel that we're gonna hear more from auction experiences.
Did you get someone... You said auction last week and somebody... said it's David Dickinson.
Is
that where
Dickinson.
You got it from?
Well, because I think David Dickinson is from he's from the same neck of the woods as my dad, so I think he does say auction in the same way, and my dad doesn't know that he says it, I don't think, until you pull him up on it. But I think it did tickle somebody, didn't it, who heard the podcast and said, "I love the way you said auction." I had a bit of a coffee through the nose situation.
But David Dickinson is from my neck of the woods. He's from Cheshire.
Oh, okay. So he's Cheshire. My dad's Leicestershire, and they do say it in Leicestershire. So maybe it's just that side. Maybe it's just the West Midlands, North West regions.
Yeah, but
maybe we do a poll, listener poll.
But Leicestershire's East Midlands.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's right in the middle.
They're too separated to be, unless there's a whole sort of strip of auction across the country.
My gosh, imagine if there is. There's a vein, you know, like a sort of a rock strata of
auction-related, like a seam of coal.
There is a seam.
There's a seam of people who say auction.
Auctioneering.
Or maybe not. Maybe it's just a, I don't know.
And
it's like
also,
I could never figure out why my dad used to say tooth
instead of tooth.
But then tooth. I realised I think it's because he grew up for a lot of his life in North Wales, and I think it might be sort of North Walian thing, because I used to know someone from Mid Wales who said tooth.
Tooth. You've just reminded me of, I saw an advert for Armani Code the other night on television, because, you know, it's, I suppose it's not getting near Christmas, but the Darf perfume ads starting to come on, and I do think you and I should do one at some point. However, what I thought was amusing, because every time I see Armani Code, I think of broad West Country people. When they say the word cold, they always say code. So is it Armani Cold by someone that's just very Devonian?
So do you always infer from that there's also an Armani Hot?
Yes, I think boiling. It should be
Armani Boiling.
You can imagine it. I'm just going to clear my throat. I'm going to try and do this. Armani Code. That's what it would be. It would be followed by Armani Thermostat, the new shaving balm from the well-known Italian style house. I also think, and made me also realise, that the Armani logo is shit. It just looks horrible. I can't stand it.
It needs a new logo.
It just looks really... It looks like a knockoff of itself. I just think it's rubbish.
Yeah, anyway, it does look cheap.
No offence to Armani, but I think the logo needs work.
Yeah, sort
yeah, I'm sure they'd out. Say the same to everything that I've ever been involved with. So.
And I know if you work for the Armani Corporation of Italy and you have any feedback on the Smith & Sniff logo, then please do get in touch. hello@smithandsniff.com. We're
going to slip this one into park.
Slip it into park.
Pull up the electric handbrake. Which might fail.
Whir, and then get out, yes. But before we do that, I have three things to tell you, and they are that, firstly, Jono has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show, which has many excellent videos on it, and also, just announced last week, Late Break Show Live, the third show, is in Manchester.
The Manchester Tour. Yeah.
It's at... Well, for people like me who grew up in the Northwest, it's what we'd still call the GMEX Centre.
That's right.
It's now called Manchester Central, isn't it? Which is what the station it's built in used to be called.
That's right. I think it's called the Central Convention Centre.
That's it. So,
but you can call it the GMEX, the artist formerly known as GMEX.
I can't not call it the GMEX, because when you said, we're going to do it in Manchester Central, and I went, what's that? Oh, the GMEX.
GMEX.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, Saturday the 6th of November, so less than a month away... I'm going to be there, you're going to be there. We're going to do the same things that we've been doing at the previous two live shows, but indoors, which is sensible because it's getting into winter and it's Manchester and it will drizzle. It will. I can say that. I grew up there. It will drizzle, probably.
It will. And
there's nothing wrong with that. Just if you're not from the area, do bring an umbrella.
Yeah, and we're going to have, if come along, we're going to have the Stone Roses, Happy Mondays. Yeah. We're going to have the Farm.
State, James.
Yeah, they're all going to turn up. And it's going to be wonderful. But in all seriousness, tickets are on sale. It would be wonderful to see you. We're going to do what we did before, a live idle chat. Richard and I are going to do a live car-based quiz. And we're going to try and gather together an eclectic mix of vehicles under a roof, which means rain won't stop play. And it's quite stressful already. But I'm excited.
I'm really excited.
Against all odds, we found a venue. We've managed to just put... My wife has managed to pull it off. So that just sounds wrong.
Fantastic.
But you know what I mean.
I feel like it's sort of like a homecoming event for me, because I grew up in the Northwest and... But also, there used to be a motor show in the GMEX in the 80s. I remember going to the motor show there with my dad. So it really is. It's quite a nostalgic place to go and
I would like to dig up some archive images of that, actually, just to sort of use them on social media on the run up to the event. Some 80s car show imagery. Everyone loves a bit of that, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I was going to say maybe I would have some photos, but I think they're long gone. Because I don't know, I take it on a 110 camera, and they were out of focus and too dark. So because that's what 110 cameras did.
Thank you for the detail. I really appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, the second thing that I have to tell you is that I have various books out. One of them is called A Medium-Sized Book of Boring Card Trivia, but you know that by now because I mention it every frigging week, pretty much. And the third thing I have to tell you, which is sort of pertinent to what we're just talking about with Late Break Live, is that in some countries in Europe, corduroy is known as Manchester, because that is where corduroy itself used to originate from when it was first developed in the 19th century.
Is that true? I didn't know it was known as Manchester.
Some parts of Scandinavia and Eastern Europe, people will say, oh, I've got a Manchester jacket, and they mean a corduroy jacket.
I love that, because the Madchester scene did resurrect corduroy as a sort of fashion item from memory. I remember being particularly into it.
I think that was a bit... Was that not a bit later? I mean, Jarvis Cocker was... very corduroy, and
he was,
I suppose, there was a band called Corduroy, and all that sort of acid jazzy stuff kind of was quite cordy at times, wasn't it? I think Madchester was more your flares and paisley shirts originally, but...
Do you know what? I've got two corduroy albums, but we haven't got time to talk about that. It's great music to
hold
put
that
on
thought.
If you sort of got a car with a dodgy carburettor and you think you're in a slow car chase. It's absolutely perfect.
They did a song called Mini, didn't they?
Yeah, and E-Type. They've done loads of car-related tunes.
Well, maybe book still them for the live show.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to book corduroy. Also JK, possibly without toilet tissues, but anyway.
All right, well, this has been us, and we'll be back again next week. But in the meantime, thank you ever so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And this is a podcast in which two of us talk about things and all that, and cars.
And shit.